have not been able to control. And yet they know in their own hearts that they shouldn't be in that trouble. But the trouble is easier than the solution. And the trouble is solved by evasion, avoidance, or escape. Where a problem becomes difficult, we try to walk out of it. When in reality, we should work out of it. Every problem is a challenge to reestablish righteousness in our own hearts and minds. It is something that we should face with diligence and should place the common good of solution above all other considerations. But we do not have the moral courage under temptation to make these decisions. Now, what is temptation? Of course, in the old days, temptation was a gentleman with horns and a forked tail who was supposed to be hiding behind every doorpost in the world. Many people were afraid to go out at night because this forked-tailed monster was waiting. Now we're afraid to go out at night for something why our neighbors will rob us. It's a still fear, and fear and mistakes and inability to cure our own difficulties, all these things continue to depress us, frighten us, and worry us. But actually, we are not in this serious a condition. We are simply in a condition where we really do not know what happiness is. And in the course of years, of course, I've known a great many people who have very large material holdings. I don't think there's one of them that would tell you honestly and quietly that the holdings had made him happy. They do not make people happy. They add to the burdens of life, and in the desperate desire to hold on to something, which we can't take with us anyway, we destroy the pleasure, happiness, and usefulness of a present existence. So the problem of getting away from happiness that results from wrong conduct or compromise of principles is something we have to face. The justification of that which is unjust. And as we try to do this, the world gets into deeper troubles every day. Actually, we note now, for the first time in a long while, a rather interesting and constructive symptom appearing. We are beginning to recognize the rights of people to think their own thoughts, particularly in matters of philosophy, morality, ethics, and religion. The tendency today in religion is to recognize, as we must do, that religion, wherever we find it, is a priceless asset. Religion is something upon which we must all try to build international relationships, because on no other level can we really reach people. Today, we go into a nation and try to industrialize it, and something happens, as happened in India recently, a great disaster. Actually, there are disasters always of one kind or another, strikes or unemployment or disease, wherever we attempt to create relationships by material considerations alone, where we try to build treaties upon industrial advantages, or where we try to create international goodwill by paying somebody else's bills. All of these things end in trouble. But as long as the individual alone realizes this, it's very difficult to work with. But now more people are realizing this every day, and the religious atmosphere is much clearer than it was not too many years ago. A kind of interesting little note came along. I take a little newspaper that is sent out by the government of Taipei. And then in this particular issue, we find the so-called Free China also in a little trouble. And what would you suppose that trouble is? The government of Taiwan has decided to build a 40-foot bronze statue of Confucius. This is because to these people, Confucius is a very important figure of integrities. And his integrities, as represented in the dialects and so forth, are among the highest, I guess, of any religion or philosophical system. So Free China wants to honor him. And they want to build that 40-foot statue on a promontory in a public area which has been reserved and which is more or less like a large park. Now, what happens? The bulletin is hardly out before the objections are organized. And on this little island with a few people, most of whom are very, very receptive to Confucius, they're already in trouble over trying to build a statue of him. One group says that there's only one likeness of him that is authentic. And the problem is, if they do not use this likeness, it's all going to be wrong. Another group says that it is being placed in a public arrangement or place which is a public property, therefore should not be used for any purpose except a park. One after another, these groups are going to organize. They are going to probably keep on objecting. They may have formed strikes and things of this kind to prove their end. But the problem of the wisdom of Confucius has suddenly gotten lost. No one has really said that the ideals of Confucianism are the things that are important. The problem of the 40-foot bronze statue is liable to tear a nation apart in an effort to honor a person who gave them the principles of brotherhood, cooperation, and mutual insight and virtue. So the virtues of Confucianism are not strong enough to prevent a strike over his statue. Now, we do this all the time. All over the world, we build churches, but people go to them, support them, and build them. But somehow, probably three and a half to 4 billion religion-oriented persons have no influence whatever in trying to prevent a nuclear war. Most of the persons who are working in armament are nominally religious people in private life. They believe in integrities, and they would like to serve them. But for some reason, there's always a reason why they can't. And the reason is now largely economic. It is also political, and of course continues in the conflicts between religious beliefs, all of which comes back to Easter, in which we are presented with the symbol of the resurrection of truth, the resurrection of love and beauty as the savior of all that lives. That integrities are important. Righteousness comes first. We must first have righteousness, and then all else that is necessary will be given unto us. But the righteousness is where the rub is, where the difficulties are accumulating. The whole trend of our modern world is not in the direction of righteousness. It is in the direction of the satisfaction of personal appetites on every level. But there's one other factor that we are beginning to recognize, and that is we're getting to be a little afraid. Fear is coming in. Fear is showing us every day that all immoderation is dangerous. Fear is showing us that if we keep on going the way we are now, we're going to be in more and more serious difficulty. And in that way, laws, universal laws, affirm themselves and assert themselves. The question now remains is how much longer are we going to make willfully posited mistakes before we catch up with the facts? Many people feel that the time has really come now when we are beginning to catch up with the facts, that little by little it is becoming apparent to those on every level of thinking that the only answer to the whole situation is honesty. And that has been a terrible, terrible discovery. It has just ruined lives, which were built entirely upon selfishness. So in some way or other, righteousness is the cure for selfishness. It is the cure for those unreasonable ambitions which cause the individual to attain his success by destroying the rights of other people. If this is the fact, watch the situation as it unfolds, and it's becoming more and more evident that all the panaceas, all the remedies, all the vast conferences are not going to amount to much of anything unless people settle down to liking each other. The more you know people, the better you like most of them. But while you are a stranger to 2/3 or 3/4 of the world, you have a difficulty there. We had that difficulty for a long time religiously. We knew practically nothing about any religion except our own. We had about 1 billion people of our general persuasion, and the other 3.5 or 4 billion didn't count. Their religion was heathenism. We were the ones that had the true religion. Now, that would have been fine if we had lived it. If we had daily and honestly accomplished the works of a great religion, we have always had the strength to do it. But gradually, the religion was lost. A theology took its place, and in the life of the individual, profit overcame the whole thing. So out of all of this problem, we have to recognize the need for the gradual realization that nature is moving in. We are living on a restricted planet. It has only a certain amount of potential. We can waste it or conserve it. If we waste it, we'll regret it. If we conserve it, we can do many things. We are living under a system of thought and economic policy that has nothing in it that is of permanent value. Every conclusion on these levels that has been made in the past has proven false in something and finally been renounced. We are here living on a shallow surface of thinking with no actual recognition of the ways to perpetuate and preserve the values that we have. We are destroying our forests, we are destroying our agriculture, we are polluting our air and water, and we're going on gloriously digging our own graves. Time to stop. It is not necessary. It is not necessary because the human values never demanded it, realized it, or needed it. And this is the problem that has to come gradually out of ourselves. We have to develop a real affection for humanity. We have to be thoughtful of our neighbor. We have to raise children properly instead of forgetting them while we go out and do as we please. We're going to have to get over all of the selfishness that hurts. Now, supposing we do neglect children for a few years, and we do get to go out and have more club life or get longer vacations, then comes the time when we have to live with these uncivilized children that we have neglected, and in recognition of a few years of fun, we'll end up with delinquent young people who will worry us the rest of our lives. And we are not at all willing to accept our own responsibility for it. Out of the proper doing of things, there is a happiness, a fulfillment, a sincere joy that comes only when we do it right. And that joy isn't subject to sudden upheavals. It isn't subject to being swept away. Because dedication can be tested, and sometimes seriously. But if we can stay with it, it will win, and we will win. So the whole problem, it seems to me, that should be recognized in connection with Easter, is that it's getting to be high time that the magnificent traditions of our world can be put to practical, actual application. That we will no longer be members of things, but we will be workers with things. That we will not call ourselves by a religious name, but we will so live that that religion will reveal itself through our conduct and through our dedications. It is important, therefore, very important at this time in our history, to realize that we are in a transitional period. This is really a new birth of time that we are talking about. The thing has reached an impasse that's been building up for 10,000 years, an impasse that will not go away, an impasse that demands a change in the basic structure of human society, a change in which integrities and values have first consideration. It has to be a matter in which the private profits of people can no longer be sustained by a world the natural resources of which are diminishing daily. It is not going to be possible to forever make fortunes in oil or fortunes in any field. It will not be possible to maintain elaborate armament programs forever because the very life of things is being destroyed. And just as the individual who is in bad trouble who perhaps has been a chronic alcoholic, finding delirium tremens have settled in, and not knowing what to do, goes to a physician and says, "What shall I do? I'm in a desperate condition." The Buddha had a fable relating to this that was very, very good, very valuable, in which he was the physician. And he came to them, the people who were sick, and those who took the medicine, which was bitter, lived and recovered. And those who did not take the medicine died or remained as they were. And the only attitude, Buddha said, is discipline the mind, redeem and regenerate conduct, and dedicate life to service. These are the things that go on and will make, ultimately, a paradise on earth. There is no reason why a people, well-educated but badly taught, should not be able to dwell together. There is no reason why the stranger must be always an enemy. He may be a friend in disguise, or a friend we have never seen. There is no reason why competition is going to add to the fulfillment of our desire to help emerging countries. All things which in themselves have the seeds of death will never in the long run result in any harvest except death. All of the things that are valuable are intangibles. They're in principles, not in the accumulation. It's not going to help much to educate people if education teaches them only to destroy each other. I think the educational system, as it was reviewed and revised by Comenius, the Moravian educator, was very good. Education is, first of all, to learn. And what is learning? Learning is rather more than anything else the gradual learning to know life, know truth, know God, and develop the strength to resist temptation. A religion without morality is merely a strange, complicated form of ignorance. It is not true intelligence. No amount of education that is wrong can produce graduates that are essentially right. The only answer to this type of education in the past has been very simple. As a well-known doctor observed on one occasion, he graduated from medical school with honors and then started at the bottom and worked up in his own practice because he had to learn everything over again. They had failed to teach him the things he needed most to know, one of which was charity and compassion for the sick. These things are very different from science, but they are far more important than science. Compassion without science will survive. Science without compassion is doomed. All of the good things of life are principles that are resident in life itself and visible in every manifestation of life. How it is possible for persons to claim or believe that they are learned and skilled and progressive and at the same time have ignored completely the moral life upon which we all depend. How this can be called education is difficult to realize. It is also difficult for us to understand how it happens that all the resources of life are being devoted almost completely to the perpetuation of something that must fail. And as Woodrow Wilson pointed out on one occasion, speaking of it as it is now, he said it is better to fail in something that must ultimately succeed than to succeed in something that must ultimately fail. And we are in this position. We are trying to succeed in something that must ultimately fail. And the only thing that we have to protect us is a spark of life inside and the mass of these sparks making a world around us and within us. The spark of reality that is eternal within our own inner core and within the great universal system to which we belong and the annual resurrection of which is represented by the symbolism of Easter. Easter is a statement that beyond all human control is a rule and that ye shall love one another. And we've laughed at it, we've ignored it, we've considered it to be impractical and unreasonable. But it is still true that the law of love is the most important thing in the world. And this love is not a physical emotion. The physical aspects of it belong with the left hand, honors and riches. But the right hand is length of life and depth of insight. And love is really the compassion that is natural to us to recognize that we are one being, one creature, manifesting through an infinitude of individuals, but always one. And that one cannot have sickness anywhere in it without the whole body becoming sick. Therefore, each Easter now, we've got to keep on selling these ideas. Not because they're ours, not because we have control of them, not because we can prove them by certain examples which we do not understand, but by something else that we know them, and that is by the internal realization of the way of life. In other words, it is the righteousness in us that is able to protect the righteousness in the world. It is the presence of God in ourselves that proves beyond all question the reality of divinity. It is the very fact that's out of the little bits of matter that we call bodies, there come these magnificent organisms, organisms as vast as great animals, as tiny as little cells, all alive, and all alive because of one life, and all naturally bestowed life, bringing with it the proof that all this bestowing is because the infinite life so loves its creation that it sends its Redeemer to us. All of the love in ourselves bears witness to a love of something greater than ourselves. And it is not the failure of our sciences or our arts, but the fact that we have stripped them of the natural affections that are necessary. We fear that these affections will interfere with profit, that they will result in unemployment. They will not result in unemployment. Selfishness is the cause of unemployment. And we must work to overcome these things. We must educate for good and not for profit. We must try to bring nations out of their own infancy, not into our way of life, but into a way of life greater than ours. We hope that each generation that comes from ourselves will be a little better. It is also true that we hope that every nation that emerges out of the mystery of disorganization is going to be a little better. That each country will learn something from our mistakes. We'll learn to keep faith. We'll learn to overcome the selfishness and pride and ambition and militarism that has distinguished and dismantled society from the beginning. We hope all these are going to be better people than we are. We hope that all things are like what the Indian sage once said, who is quoted in one of the early sacred books, that it is the hope and divine aspiration of the guru or teacher that he shall live to see one of his disciples excel him in all ways. And we as a nation should be living to watch other nations excel us in values. Not in locking ourselves in a competition that's going to end in a trade war, but uniting us all in a code of preservation by which we will cheerfully reunite with all others to protect our survival, to protect the happiness of our people, to protect the divine laws that are being manifested, and to contribute to the eternal evolution of life on this planet and in worlds to come. All these things should be our recognition. The great experiment of Penn, the holy experiment, is one that we are now faced with. The experiment of creating a new definition of the world. The world has infinite opportunity, but also a world that must be guarded by appropriate value of responsibility. We are here to make a better world, not to make richer people. We are here to make certain that the values of life come to their normal and proper ends, because this is the only way we should ever know happiness. Happiness is not going to come from what we have. It's going to come from what we are. It is going to come from the internal realization that we have done a good job, that we have fulfilled the rules of life that we are supposed to fulfill, that we have kept the faith, and that we have therefore come into a security which is beyond human estimation. We don't know what happiness is. What we commonly call happiness is a kind of marginal contentment. It is ability to accept things as they are as better than they might be or worse than they should be. All these things are not happiness. There can be no happiness for a real human being in a world that is in misery. There is no way in which the one individual, all by themselves, can attain all good things while others are deprived of everything. This is not a matter of socialism. This is not a matter of political structure. It is a matter that we are controlled by a complete deism. We are controlled not by an economic policy, but by a divine power. And that this divine power is the final arbiter of all things, the final arbitrator of life, the final source of authority. And that this authority has cleared itself, revealed itself, and is showing itself every moment in the magnificent structure of creation as we see it. A world that we are disfiguring and decimating without necessarily accomplishing any good or happiness for ourselves. A world which, with proper integration and organization, will not only produce a completely secure civilization, but will free us for the more valuable things of life. It will free us for contemplation of values, will free us to enrich our philosophy of living, to come into a greater and fuller sense of internal integrities, will give us a sense of safety which we have lost, because we can never be safe while half the world is ignorant. All these things have to be worked out in a spirit not of material enforcements, not a policing of man's faults, but a building and developing of the eternal virtues of existence. And this is the second coming, in my mind, of the divine power. When it comes to us in an emergency, when we have, if it has come after we have denied it three times or many times, that we have sacrificed it for values that were valueless in eternity, that we have compromised our divine heritage for a bowl of pottage. All these things we have to sometime come to know. And out of the knowing of these things, we do have the beginning of the holy experiment of eternal brotherhood. And it is not only now due, but the need of it is pressing in on us every moment. 500 years ago, we never knew these things. 100 years ago, well, they didn't matter much. But now, as problems increase, populations increase, natural resources diminish, and the struggle to maintain a false world becomes more and more bitter, with millions of so-called innocent people dying for the preservation of arrogance and ignorance. This type of thing cannot go on. It was not intended to go on. But it is true, and we must face it, that we were here to learn. And as Bottom says, the Midsummer Night's Dream, we've been slow of learning. We have not done the thing that we should have done. We have continued to try to force our own ambitions as the fulfillment of the divine plan. We have created theologies in which our gods were as selfish as ourselves. We have gone through every type of misunderstanding and misinterpreting that is imaginable. And here we are with all our lore, fools no wiser than before. And this we have to take care of. And Easter is a wonderful time to kind of think this through, gain a new sense of integrities, reinstate our dedications, and turn the authority of our lives to that dweller in the heart, which is our true life, that we shall no longer depend upon the mind to save us or the hand to enrich us, but that the hand and the mind and the heart must be always in service to the keeper of life, the divine power that abides within each of us and is always the hope of glory. For it is this divinity in ourselves that is going to keep right on to being divine, and we are going to discover it only when we live according to its rules. we will find in the uniting our own effort with the divine plan as it is even etched in our own bodies, we're going to find a happiness we've never known before. We're going to discover what it means to live in a world in which there is no longer worry over what is wrong, but rather there is a newer and greater rejoicing over what is right. This has to come, and as many people are beginning to see today, it's not a discouraging problem. It is not a hopeless matter. It is not something that can go on and ever, generation after generation, and we pass it on as a worthless heritage to our issues. It is not this at all. It is something that is coming to a gradually to the realization that life is more important than death, that right is better than wrong, that truth is better than error, and that all the good things, the happiness we want, the real enlightenment, the real righteousness with which we are concerned is available to us and is going to come, and that one by one we are going to gain it because we are going to find that all else fails. And nothing stands, nothing survives, and nothing endures but that which is according to the divine purpose and the divine plan. And as long as that purpose is present, we are safe. And that purpose is visible to us every day we live. This purpose is visible in every certainty of science, in every dream of philosophy, every prayer of religion. It's here and always has been. But we've never been true to it. But one thing we can know, that regardless of how we live or how we think, truth is going to be true to us. And we're going to find ways gradually of fulfilling the magnificent destiny for which we were intended, and which is inevitable to us in spite of all the mistakes we choose to make. It's coming, and one of these days, Easter, will be representing a restoration of the divine plan in the world of human beings. Thank you.